Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight I'll be speaking with John Caffiero of the band Osaka Pop Star, along with Barry Hansen, a.k.a. Dr. Demento. We'll hear about the two-disc set of Dr. Demento covered in punk. Punk artists covering some classic Dr. Demento staples, as well as some Dr. Demento artists covering some classic punk. First, though, with another side of comedy and more, here's KVCR's Lillian Vasquez.
My guest is actor, producer, writer, and comedian Sean Wayans. His family's name is synonymous with the entertainment industry.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Excited to speak with you. As I just mentioned, your family is big in show business, from the eldest to the youngest. But it wasn't always that way. You're from a family of 12 with 9 siblings, all working in the entertainment industry. How did your family fall into the entertainment field?
Well, Keenan always wanted to be a stand-up. He used to watch Richard Pryor whenever he was on when he was little. And me being his little brother, and me and Marlon being his little brother, we used to watch him watch Richard Pryor. Mm. So that became our thing, too, because we looked up to him. So, you know, we were all class clowns. Every last one of us was the kid that made the class laugh in school. The problem is we all had the same teachers, so Keenan and Damon and Dwayne went first. And then by the time me and Marlon came along, they were used to our shtick. They already knew the punchline.
So they were on to you by the time you guys got there, huh?
Yeah, Keenan and Damon got a laugh. Me and Marlon got suspended.
Did you always know you were funny, or did you feel you had to be funny because of your siblings? Or was it just kind of embedded in you?
It was embedded in me, you know? It was just like the language for us. It was a way of life. We didn't even really think about whether if we was funny or not. We were just funny.
So you were just being you, it sounds
just
like.
Just being me. Yep, just being ourselves. Just laughing. We laughed at everything. Everything, no matter what. Anybody get in trouble, we laughed. Anybody got a spanking, we laughed. Anybody got in a fight, we laughed. Like, that just became the way we got through every day, was just laughing.
So take me back to the first time you're on stage. Were any of your siblings there, or did you have an open audience with no family members? Do you remember that first time?
Yeah. First time on stage, I was 17 years old. I came out to California for the summer. Keenan let me come stay with him while he was directing I'ma Get You Sucker, his directorial debut. I stayed in his house while he was shooting that movie, me and my best friend. And I promised myself that before I went back to New York to finish my last year of school, that I was going to start my stand-up comedy career. So I hung out most of the summer. I enjoyed L.A. And then at the last, 3 weeks before I went back, I went to the Laugh Factory, put my name in a hat, and then went and did my little audition. And nobody was there. It was just me and two of my good friends from L.A., and we all went up that night. And after we got off stage, we ran to Keenan's house, and I taped it, and I let him hear it. And he was like, "That's good, and I'll keep doing it." And I never stopped.
So you honed your skills and you went back on the stage again and did some stand-up comedy?
So I went back to New York. I did the same thing again, this time at the Improv. I put my name in a hat and waited online. And the first few times I did it, I didn't get called. And then finally I got in to an audition. She told me to come back and keep working on my stuff and come back. So I went and hit all the other comedy clubs mm-hmm. around the city, me and my buddies at the time. And we just would go to open mic spots and just work out material. And I got better and better. And then finally I went back and she passed me.
Nice.
Then I started working the comic strip. And I would hang out with Chris Rock at the time. And he would take me with him. And, you know, he was further along in the game and he was already good. But I would go and I'd watch him and I'd learn. And, you know, he'd show me the ropes and we hit all the spots. And when Damon would come in town, I'd go to the clubs with him. And so I was just like the comedy brat.
And what were you learning?
Everything. How to construct a joke, how to hold the mic, how to perform your jokes, how to physicalize them. I learned everything.
Wow. Growing up in New York with your parents, were you guys always in trouble? And were you guys a handful or were you good kids? And if you got in trouble, did your parents call you by the right name when they were about ready to scold you?
They called us by the right name when they was ready to scold us. only. Every other time they got our name wrong. But you knew your name was up when it was time for you to get your little lesson. But we were good kids, especially given the circumstances. I know me and Marlon were really good kids. Not to say that we didn't get in trouble,
sure.
But in the big scheme of things, in New York City, mm-hmm. in the 70s, mm. 10 kids to a family in the projects, we were saints.
My guest is actor, producer, writer, and comedian Sean Wayans. Of all those professions that I just listed, which one do you like or prefer to do the most?
Actor? I love them all.
Okay.
For different reasons. I love stand-up because, you know, you don't have to answer to nobody. You're the writer, you're the director, you're the studio. You do how you want to do it, and nobody can tell you nothing. The audience is the judge.
Sure.
I like DJing because I like to see people dance. I like to put people in a good mood. It's fun. Hmm. It's also therapeutic because it allows you to shut the world off and you're almost on your own planet just listening to the music that you want to hear. Hmm. It also makes me want to write after I DJ for a while for some reason. It gets my mind going. I love writing because, you know, I like being in my house and getting lost in my thoughts and, you know, taking a blank page and filling it up with something that eventually people end up appreciating and, you know, get a lot of joy out of. Directing is another form of that same feeling, is putting something together out of nothing and making it something special for the audience. Acting is just fun to perform. It's fun to take some words off a page, make it yours, and then, you know, make people believe you and also make people laugh, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And producing is just another hat that is fun to be able to see a project from start to finish and being a big part of making those elements come together and seeing your project all the way through to the big screen or the small screen.
Or the stage.
Or the stage.
Let's talk about your newest project, The Boo Crew. First, it was an animated series that can be seen on YouTube. Where did you come up with the idea for this project? And then tell me about the series that takes place in New York City and its lead character, D-Rock.
Okay, well, I grew up in New York. In the 70s, we had some really cool children's programming back then, you know, from Sesame Street to Charlie Brown to Fat Albert and Davy and Goliath.
Mm.
And those were the shows that, you know, especially Fat Albert, Charlie Brown, and Davy and Goliath, as I got older, became shows that really kind of helped shape the young man I became because they taught me some good lessons. They gave me good tools to have when I got into certain situations to think about. And so that kind of stuck with me. And when I got older, I always said I wanted to do something like that for the generation that was the little babies that, you know, when I'm the adult. So
right.
That's where the Boo Crew was inspired. So it actually came along after I started having children and, you know, wanting to put something out there that would help to make the world better for them. So, you know, I created the Boo Crew along with my brothers Keenan and Amal, and they helped me put it together. But I've been doing most of the work on it because it's my passion project. So we did two specials for Nickelodeon back in probably 2006. Mm. And then our deal expired, and so I decided to take it independent. And so we have it on YouTube, a YouTube channel now. I have the two specials there, and I'm working on the third special. We have two albums that are produced as well that are on iTunes that are kid-friendly hip-hop rock and roll album. I wanted to take those pieces from the characters in the specials and the music that was created and put it on its feet and make a live presentation of the show. That's where the Boo Crew Live comes from. It's basically I wanted to throw a concert for kids and moms and dads, you know, family-friendly, fun, and educational and heartwarming. And that's what the Boo Crew Live is about.
Tell me about D-Rock.
D-Rock is a good kid from New York City. He's a little entrepreneur, little businessman. He's always got a way to try to, you know, make some money. Or he's always trying to hustle his mom to get the hottest video game or newest sneakers. You know, his sister, Dee Dee, she's the one that grounds him,
mm.
you know, whenever he starts dreaming a little too big or getting too big for his britches. She brings him back down to reality. But the whole entire Boo Crew is all good children, and even though they learn their lessons, they always do the right thing at the end of the day.
Kind of like Fat Albert.
Kind of like Fat Albert, yep, yep. If you think about it in concept, it's kind of Fat Albert meets Charlie Brown with a hip-hop twist to it. And really, I'm doing me and my friends as a kid. that's where the stories are coming from. Is a lot of these stories is me and my friends growing up in New York.
So is there bullying in there? What are the messages? What are the stories?
Well, for the Boo Crew Live show, the theme is called Just Be You. It teaches kids self-esteem. It's basically D-Rock, the lead character, is having anxiety about going back to school this year. And he's having anxiety about how he should act in order to fit in with all the cool kids in the school. Mm-hmm. And throughout the course of the journey of the show, what he learns is the Boo Crew teaches him that he doesn't have to change who he is to fit in with any particular group. Just be you, and the right people will love you for who you are. So that's the message for that particular show. Our Christmas show is giving is better than receiving. And there will be a bullying episode as well that I'm going to work on, because, like I said, I want to take the issues that children are dealing with and I want to give them tools to cope with them using humor and music and the characters that I created.
Did you write the words to the Just Be You song?
Me and a buddy of mine wrote Just Be You, and a lot of the music on there, me and my good friend Casey wrote a lot of the music.
Let me ask you, it's a little different when you put together these characters that are now big characters. It's one thing from an animated, but to put it at a live show, what was that process like for you physically, getting those characters created, built, to put them on stage?
It was a lot of work, but very, very gratifying. It's fun. It's like one big arts and craft session. You know, like I'm dealing with everything from wardrobe to eyebrows to the kind of hair that I want and the color that I want, the texture, how I want it to be and how tall I want them to be and complexion. Just everything about it is all in the process of putting this together. And then to watch it all come together when those characters was all standing there after a year and a half in the making, you just feel like, wow, that was an incredible journey. And I'm really excited now to put them in the story and watch them on stage and watch them perform this play for the moms, dads, and the kids.
What age group is this stage for? Who do you think makes a good audience for this live performance?
I think anyone from 3 years old to 9 years old. That's with the little boys and girls. I think parents are going to enjoy it too, because it's going to take them back a little bit to the old school, you know. I think they're going to enjoy it as well. For the older teenagers, unless you're a big kid at heart, it's not really for them, but it's for the little babies, for the young ones, 3 to 9, maybe 10.
My guest is comedian, producer, writer, actor, Sean Wayans. Sean, I have just two more questions for you. What's funny to you? What makes you laugh?
What makes me laugh? There's so many things that can make you laugh. Like, you know, things going wrong can make you laugh. People can make me laugh. People who have a certain attitude, you know, a certain point of view on something that should be thought about a different way can make me laugh. You know, if someone got the wrong attitude, it can make me laugh. It all depends on where I am, what I'm doing, and if I have my comedy hat on that day.
Ah. Do your kids think you're funny?
Yes. Yeah, they love my humor. And that's not easy to do, to get your kids to laugh, because most kids give their parents the side eye when they try to be funny. But my kids, I have them splitting up.
Who in your family still makes you laugh?
Every last one of them. Keenan makes me laugh. Damon makes me laugh. Marlon makes me laugh. Me and Damon talk on the phone a lot, though. He's like one of my favorite to talk on the phone with, because all we do is just me, him, and little Damon on the phone is just a laugh fest.
That's nice.
And my nephew, Craig, too.
What's next on your list to tackle?
Working on some TV stuff with my brother, Keenan, and just finished up a script that I wrote that me and Keenan are trying to put together. So, yeah, we've got a couple of things that I'm working on.
Sean, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Good talking to you.
That was KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Sean Wayans. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. You can join us online also at kvcrnews.org. For the rest of the program, it's a recent conversation I had with John Caffiero and Barry Hansen, a.k.a. Dr. Demento. Caffiero conceived of and then produced the latest in the line of Dr. Demento offerings, Dr. Demento Covered in Punk. Punk bands, including Caffiero's Osaka Pop Star, covering Dr. Demento staples, and some folks from the world of Dr. Demento, covering some classic punk.
This has been cool for me. I loved getting the Dr. Demento albums here and there. But, yeah, I didn't have access to the radio show. I grew up in a combination of Milwaukee and then Western Kentucky, so the show was something new for me. So I'd like to just ask a little bit about this. First of all, how did this even start, you two coming together for this project?
Well, I'll let John tell the story.
Okay.
I've been a fan of the Docs since I'm about 6 or 7 years old.
Okay.
And to make a long story short, there's a German outsider artist named Klaus Beyer that I'm a fan of, and he made it his lifelong mission to cover all of the Beatles songs in German language. But the problem is he's not a very good singer, and he doesn't have permission from the Beatles or the music meds. So he would take little snippets of the Beatles music, cut them together, and then sing over them. I heard this on another radio show that I was doing years back when I was promoting the first Osaka Pop Star record, Osaka Pop Star being my band, and loved it. And then I was put in touch with Klaus's manager, started mentioning in interviews that I was a fan of Klaus Beyer. Klaus got wind of this, got turned on to my music, and then sent me a cover version of one of my original songs in Osaka Pop Star, done the same way he had done all the Beatles songs. And then his manager and label asked me if they could have permission to put it out. So we actually ended up doing a joint venture together of an EP of Klaus Beyer covering some of my songs called Klaus Beyer Covers Osaka Pop Star. And it's really bizarre outsider artist work. I had sent that to Dr. Demento, and then he had played Klaus Beyer's German language cover version of one of my songs called Where's the Cap'n, which is a punk pop ode to Cap'n Crunch cereal. And then he played that back-to-back with an original version by Osaka Pop Star that was a remix with some old Cap'n Crunch Jay Ward commercial sound bites thrown throughout it. And then the doc wrote to me and said, I just wanted to let you know, thanks for sending this in. I played it this week. We became in touch. And maybe 6 months to a year later, I pitched him on this crazy idea I had, which is Dr. Demento covered in punk.
And so the doctor credits you. This is in one of the opening Dr. Demento segments. And that's something really cool about this. It's not just another major collection on a disc. It's actually presented as a radio show. So I guess before we go too much further, talk to me about the thought process on presenting this as a show, like the radio show or like the internet radio show, as opposed to just a collection of songs.
Well, it's interesting. You brought up earlier that you're a fan of the compilation albums that Dr. Demento put out, and I was as well. Although I liked the radio show, I lived on the East Coast, and I still do, and the radio show changed stations quite often. And back then, there was no internet. Everything was through word of mouth. So the Dr. Demento radio show, for me, was like an elusive UFO that would disappear and reappear without warning. But the one thing I could always count on were those compilation albums,
yes,
which I absolutely loved, and I would scoop them up, you know, every single one of them I could find. And frankly, even the Rhino Records compilations that weren't always Dr. Demento compilations, in my mind, were still Dr. Demento brand records, because I kind of credited him as the founder of the movement and the curator of all the demented artists. So I loved those records as a kid, and I thought it would be a lot of fun to put a contemporary spin on that and have all of these punk bands doing new punk pop cover versions of the novelty songs made famous on the airwaves of the Dr. Demento show, and also reverse the concept with some special guests doing newly demented versions of punk classics. But then to really put it through, to give people the experience of the Dr. Demento show itself, but this bizarro punk rock version of it, where it's got his opening theme in a punk version. It's got the jingles in a punk version. It's got the bumpers throughout it custom to the record, and create the whole world with, of course, the cherry on top being Dr. Demento himself front and back announcing all of the songs, sharing interesting factoids and anecdotes about them, about the songs, about the artist, which to me is a whole other level of the enrichment of listening to the show, is that you enjoy the music, but you learn and get turned on to other cool things. So that really was the genesis of it, and I'm really, really pleased with the end result.
Oh, yes, yes. That's why you should be trying to put together questions instead of just kicking back and listening to the discs. Very, very difficult to not just listen. Now, you mentioned something that you didn't actually gather songs that were recorded and say, okay, this fits the bill, but rather you contacted people, with the exception of maybe the Joan Jett's cover on there. Did you actually contact people and ask them to cover certain songs?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. I handpicked and contacted everyone on the record, including Joan Jett. And in fact, while I credit that the Joan Jett track preexisted, the reason that it's on there is because when I was speaking with Kenny Laguna, who's Joan's longtime collaborator and manager, about what song Joan might do, and because I would recommend to all the artists that there was a specific track in mind I had for them. In some cases, the artist would say, oh, I'd like to do X, Y, or Z, but 9 out of 10 times I would pitch one. And in Joan's case, I mentioned Science Fiction Double Feature, and then Kenny said, oh, well, if you want Joan to do Science Fiction Double Feature, she's already got a great version of it that we recorded years ago that we just never released, and if you like it, you could just use that. And then they played it for me, and I absolutely loved it, and thought, well, there's absolutely no reason for Joan to re-record it, because this is amazing just the way it is, and it's never been released. So that was the only one that pre-existed. But yes, every single recording on this record was newly created specifically for this project. So the difference between this and all of the prior Dr. Demento compilations is that, as you mentioned, instead of just seeking out pre-existing masters and putting them on here, I had produced and created new recordings specific for this record, as well as the radio show surrounding it itself. Everything you hear is newly created, and again, the exception being Joan's track, which was never before released. Science fiction.
All the sound bites, all the Elvira kind of stuff coming in with a quick, you're listening to Dr. Demento, this is all fresh for the album.
Any of the bumpers that specifically mentioned Covered in Punk are fresh for the album, but a couple of them, like Bobby Pickett, of course, because he's deceased, that pre-existed. But even then, I breathed new life into it because I re-edited it to give his delivery a smoother, fluid, more feel, and then put all the sound effects behind it to recreate the opening of the Monster Mash. So even in some cases, the Doc's classic bumpers were given a new life within it. But all of the Adam West, Weird Al, Elvira, MCP Pants, Brack, all that stuff is all newly created for this record.
That's John Caffiero of Osaka Pop Star and producer for Dr. Demento, Covered in Punk, along with Barry Hansen, a.k.a. Dr. Demento. More information at coveredinpunk.com. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org. Doctor, tell me about when you got this call from John or this contact from management. How did this work on your end of things?
Well, I get cockamamie suggestions all the time, along with great ones, and I quickly realized that this was a great suggestion. John was very eloquent in laying out the concept and what he wanted to do with it and how it was going to proceed, and so I said, okay, let's give it a try, and 4 years later, here we are.
Wow. It was a 4-year project, gosh.
Yeah.
Now, a quick side note, were you ever Barry Hansen on the air before the concentration on the novelty songs and the creation
of the... In college and on KPFK, I did a show on a non-commercial station in Los Angeles for a little while. So yes, but the Dr. Demento show is what took off 1970 and 71, and then gathered some listeners and started gathering some major momentum, especially after I began concentrating more on funny music.
Yeah.
It started out as a rare rock and roll oldies show, on which I really sounded more like a nerdy collector. But as I took this novelty thing and ran with it, with the encouragement of the station, I grew more into that character, which really didn't exist before. The name came first, actually. Steven Siegel, better known as the obscene Stephen Kleen, who was the person who got me into commercial radio at KPPC in Pasadena. He suggested the name Dr. Demento. He and a friend had apparently thought it up and thought it might be a good name for a disc jockey. And when he met me, he decided that I fit the character. So I became Dr. Demento. And I took that and ran with it. And that was almost 50 years ago. So I'm still running.
Oh, my goodness. Did you define the character or did the character define you? You
know, I grew into it. It started out... I was a nerdy collector, and I would say, oh, there was an original recording of It's All Over Now, the Rolling Stones current hit, and that was an original recording made a few years ago by the Valentinos, a soul group from Los Angeles. So I had more of that kind of delivery.
Right on. Okay,
of course, cool. You can actually hear that delivery yourself by going to drdemento.com, where we have a whole lot of old shows archived for your pleasure.
John, this also came from the doctor on one of the intros that you used to write to Barnes & Barnes. This is a group that folks would know of through Dr. Demento. Got to Get a Fake ID, Three Drunk Newts, these kinds of classics. You used to actually write to them on a fairly regular basis. I suppose you were in grammar school or something. Is that right?
Yeah, I was. Okay. Yeah, I was a huge fan of Barnes & Barnes, having been introduced to them through the Dr. Demento show, and then also discovering the short film Fish Heads, which MTV used to run a lot when it was actually a music video channel in the 80s, and loved it. I mean, to me, Fish Heads was the track that really defined the demented music movement of the late 70s into the 80s for me as a kid. And I looked at them like, you know, they were rock stars. I mean, I loved that Vubaha album and, you know, tracks like Fish Heads and Boogie Woogie Amputee and Party in My Pants and all those tracks that you've mentioned. Huge fan. And I used to write them fan letters, and they were nice enough to write me back and answer all of my dopey kid questions. And we're in touch today.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. And both Billy Mumy and Robert Hamer, who are Art and Artie Barnes, the two artists behind Barnes & Barnes who wrote and performed Fish Heads, among all those other tracks, they sent me a really nice email the weekend after the record was released congratulating me and saying how much they liked my band Osaka Pop Stars' new cover version of their classic Fish Heads, which was a lot of fun to do.
Smoke your little smoke, drink your little drink.
This is maybe the Dr. Demento album that you just really want to crank up louder than any of the others.
Disco boy, run to the toilet and comb your hair.
A lot of songs worth cranking up, but things like My Name is Larry or Star Trek, those aren't really loud songs.
Oh, that's plenty loud. My name is Larry.
Yeah, unless you're really
get much louder than that, but you're right. This album rocks. You know, it's an up-to-date, modern recording with lots of energy throughout.
Oh, my God, yes. And you've got in here some Zappa tunes that are really crankable, for lack of a better word, Disco Boy,
yeah.
My Guitar Wants to Kill Your Mama. Now, I understand that Zappa was actually on your show way back when. Is that right, fact or fiction?
Yeah, I interviewed him four times on the show and once on television, so yeah. And we go back. I met him actually before I was Dr. Demento. I met him for the first time. And when he was just starting the Mothers of Invention.
Oh, gosh.
We happened to meet.
It's like 65 or something.
Yeah.
And so you do credit him in a way with how your show ended up being presented. How so, please?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, in the period just before I started the show, Zappa was certainly my very, very favorite contemporary music performer of anybody.
Oh, cool.
I like the Mothers even better than the Beatles.
Nice.
So, yeah, that was part of it. The first time that we had a chance to meet and sit down and talk to each other, I think he was quite impressed. You know, Zappa, among the many things that Zappa is fond of, he's very fond of 50s doo-wop street corner vocal group music.
Yeah.
And he also, since he was a teenager, a big fan of certain very avant-garde classical composers, especially Edgar Varese.
Yes,
and I think I was the first person that he ever sat down and talked to who was familiar with both of those idioms of music. the avant-garde classical, because I'd been a music major in college, and the doo-wop, because simply I'd grown up with that stuff, and I loved R&B from my teenage years.
You're speaking with Dr. Demento, along with John Caffiero, of Osaka pop star and producer for Dr. Demento Covered in Punk. Information at coveredinpunk.com. More just ahead as KBC Arts continues. Now, one of the bands giving a new spin on a Dr. Demento classic is Caffiero's own Osaka pop star.
Fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum. Fish heads, full size, roly-poly fish heads, fish heads, full size, eat them up, yum. In the morning, laughing, happy fish heads, in the evening, floating in the soup. Fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, eat them up, yum.
Well, now, one of the things that you do just crank up on this disc, and this is one that we were talking about just a second ago, Fishheads. This was done by you, John, and Osaka Popstar. Was this one of the ones that you just always been wanting to do, or you've been maybe playing it in your live shows and it came to fruition for this album? Talk about this for you and the band.
Well, being a huge fan of Barnes & Barnes as a kid, it certainly was a lot of fun covering it. I had never done it prior to the record. Yeah. I covered it and performed it for the first time specifically for this album, so we hadn't done it live before, but we certainly will moving forward. But no, I hadn't done it before, but it was really a lot of fun to cover it, and a lot of care and attention to detail went into it, too. Just a few little anecdotes I can share is,
please,
in the original music video slash short film, Fishheads, Bill Paxton, who is a famous actor that sadly passed away not long ago, also directed the video.
Oh.
And when his character, who he co-stars in it as well, as Dr. Demento does too, Dr. Demento plays a vagrant. In the opening, when Bill Paxton is walking out, he's whistling the melody of Fishheads, but in a harmony that is not within the song. So for the guitar solo in the song, I actually have the solo play the same harmony that Bill Paxton's character whistles in the video. I did all the backing vocals, or a great deal of the backing vocals, gargling water in my mouth so that the ooh backing vocals had like a fishy, gargly sound about them. We even used Barnes & Barnes guitar picks when we rehearsed the song for the first few times to get our own version of it down.
Oh, cool.
That both Robert and Billy had sent to me. So there's a lot of little special connections and fun things that went into the making of the record.
John is very detail-oriented, just like Weird Al. That's something you don't normally associate off the top of your head with punk rock. It's supposed to be kind of slapdash. But
yeah.
John thinks of these details, and it just makes the music more wonderful.
Thank you.
You mentioned Weird Al just a second ago, and this is another one that I just love cranking up. We've got him doing Beat the Brat. Oh, there's the Ramones. That's why I said that. Again, this was your choice to ask Weird Al to do Beat the Brat. And, of course, there's a Weird Al connection here that I want to address with Dr. Demento here in a moment. But first, you, John, contacting Al with this song in mind?
Yeah, absolutely. I really had envisioned, because Al is the most successful of all comedy artists, and he was born and bred of the Dr. Demento show, I thought it would be the ultimate finale for the record to have Weird Al Yankovic do a demented spin on a punk classic. And I proposed Beat on the Brat, and Al loved the idea. He's also a fan of the Ramones, and just thought that the whole project in general sounded like a lot of fun, immediately agreed to come on board. And then the irony in this is that the Ramones' lyrics for Beat on the Brat were demented enough just as they were, so there was no need to even parody or change the lyrics. So it's the first time Al has ever recorded a studio version of a song without parodying the lyrics, but it's still got a demented twist to it, even though we play it straight. Because I'd always felt that there's a connection between novelty music and punk rock, and that both of them had the spirit of individuality. Both of them were rooted in outsiders. If you didn't fit in, you did fit in. That was the whole point. And as Dr. Demento did point out, that while a lot of punk rockers were just about, you know, taking limited abilities or limited talent and making the most of it by stretching your personality, I definitely feel that there was a sense of humor in the early punk rock from the 70s and the 80s that shares a kinship with novelty music, and I think Beat on the Brat is a perfect example of that.
Oh, yeah, I played Beat on the Brat, the Ramones original, when it was new, so I responded to it then.
And you're right, some of these songs are not necessarily the novelty songs that we were talking about. John, you mentioned something earlier that called out to me, and that is even this K-Tel collection that I had as a kid called Looney Tunes. It had nothing to do directly with Dr. Demento, but I still associated with it because it was things like Shaving Cream and Little Red Riding Hood and Transfusion and a lot of these early songs. We didn't get Davy's Dinghy and things like that on there, but now there's a difference too, is with Davy's Dinghy. Well, no, let's leave that one alone. That's something else.
You don't want to touch Davy's Dinghy.
Yeah, let's not touch Davy. Well, Barry, would you address how it is that you even heard from Weird Al in the first place? If he had not contacted you, you said once that he might be a very successful architect. How did you even hear from him?
Well, I started playing songs that had been sent in to me, usually on little reel-to-reel tapes or sometimes cassettes. And Al, listening when he was like 13, heard a few of these along with the Alan Sherman and Stan Freberg and so on. Mm. And I think he kind of thought, well, you know, maybe I can do that. So he practiced and wrote songs and finally decided to bear down and finish one and send it to me, and I responded right away. It was just great. Crudely recorded, but I could tell right away that this kid had a world of talent.
It was something about cruising in a family station wagon or something like that.
It was called Belvedere Cruising, and the Yankovic family owned a Plymouth Belvedere. And so it was just a simple song about cruising around their hometown in Lynnwood, California, in this big car, and how much fun it was. And it gave Al a chance to make up funny lines about various other kinds of cars, like, there's something about a comet that makes me want to vomit. So I heard that and right away thought, that's real good for my show. I'm going to play that on the air. So I did, and Al kept sending me more songs, and they just kept getting better and better.
Well, I think I knew of My Bologna through one of your albums before we got him on.
That was a breakthrough. That was the first number one song he had on my show. And that was a parody, of course, unlike Belvedere Cruising, which was an original. That kind of set Al down his career path, where he became known mainly as the parody guy, which is kind of interesting because his next tour is going to be all originals.
Mm. That's Dr. Demento, along with John Caffiero, a Osaka pop star, and producer for Dr. Demento Covered in Punk. Information at coveredinpunk.com.
It can take away your blues. All you've got to do is cruise in my big black Plymouth Belvedere tonight with red upholstery. Go a Belvedere cruising tonight. Yes, indeed. Woo! Go a Belvedere cruising tonight. Yeah! Go a Belvedere cruising tonight.
Were there songs that were this close to making the cut that didn't? And, with this being such an expansive collection, is there even a possibility of a, you know, spare parts disc or whatever?
Absolutely. In fact, there's a wealth of ideas that I had that did not make the record because of either scheduling conflicts with artists or just timing not working out, and the fact that there's only so much you can put in 2 hours. As it is, honestly, originally this was just going to be a single album.
Oh.
But the more I got into it and the more I produced, the more it grew, and every idea that I had I would follow up on, and as they all came to fruition, I just thought, well, the traditional Dr. Demento show ran 2 hours, and the show, when it was syndicated on vinyl, would be a double disc. Let's do the same thing, and I'm so glad that I did because I think it really just intensifies the whole message of the project. But in answer to your question, yes, absolutely. We're already talking about the possibility of a volume 2, and there is a wealth of material that I would just need to produce up for it, but all of the ideas are there. And I will say there are a couple of tracks that are not on this record that are all ready to go that would be on the next volume.
Where are you?
Where are you?
I would imagine most of the people that you contacted, if not blanketly all of them, had to have been just chomping at the bit and just really anxious when they heard from you about this. Who really stood out as far as anxious, fervent agreement?
Well, a great deal of the artists really loved the idea, and many of them were fans and wanted to immediately come on board. Probably the one with the quickest response, though, as you've described, would be Fred Schneider. When I approached Fred about being on the record and doing something, he immediately got back to me and already even knew what he wanted to do. I was proposing that Fred consider doing King Tut, originally by Steve Morris.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Because I would have thought that that would translate really well into Fred's sound. But Fred immediately knew, oh, no, I want to do Fluffy, which...
Yep.
Was a really unique choice, and I'm glad that he pushed for that and wanted to do it, because it made me go even further outside the box, as if I wasn't already outside of the box enough already with the project in general. Because Fluffy, if you're familiar with the original, it's very maudlin, and even though it's a funny track, it's known for being intentionally sung really badly, and it's a very almost downbeat yet uplifting at the same time. So I wanted to combine the spirit of punk rock, the spirit of Fred Schneider, the spirit of the B-52s, and the spirit of Fluffy all into one, and it turned into this very upbeat pop punk song that I'm really pleased with the way it turned out, and it's iconically Fred Schneider.
There are folks on here that people should not be surprised that are on a Dr. Demento associated album. But you know what? They don't sound like folks. You know, we've heard maybe William Shatner doing Rocket Man. But in this case, no, it's you can't quite hear him on that. Same thing with Adam West. They're not quite playing themselves, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, everybody really got into the role, and William Shatner and Adam West being two perfect examples, they're both fine actors with great senses of humor, and they brought that to their tracks. I mean, they're acting as well as singing, and that really comes into play in this. And I also think that it's really contingent on, if you're in a film, the director, or record, the producer. It really, I think that the person you're working with makes the difference too in helping you to be your best and achieve what it is that you're capable of achieving that you might not even see, because it's hard to get outside of yourself. But yeah, they both gave amazing performances that I think go above and beyond anything that they've done before, at least in my opinion, and many people have said they think that Mr. Shatner's cover of Garbage Man is one of the best tracks, if not the best track he's ever done, and I take that as a huge compliment.
Oh, it should be, yes, and it actually is. Yes, when he did Rocket Man, that was very much a parody of himself, but Garbage Man, you may not even guess that it's him until you catch the credits.
So that's it. It's really over. Don't be crying about it. Go home. There's no more album. You better stop listening. You might as well pull your ears off and throw them away. You've got no use for them anymore. You don't deserve to hear anything else after this album. Is that good? Nothing more to see here. Not that there was anything to see in the first place, because you listened to it. Get it? You can't see what's on the album. Cause it's audio. Turn off the stereo, stupid.
Well, you've got Brack with this closing message. And that was maybe the fourth time I nearly spat out my coffee when I heard that. So, truly, did one of you guys write that? Was this totally improvised? I just don't know what to say about this other than I have to know.
The Brack stuff,
yes,
is a combination of Andy and I, Andy Merrill being the voice of Brack. It's a combination of Andy and I writing, and a lot of it is just stuff he would improvise. Like, I would give him a general idea, like, for example, I'd say, do me a favor, just say something like, you know, that's it, show's over, go home, what are you doing here? And then he would just go off, because he is I mean, when he gets into it, he really becomes that character. So I'd be able to give him a general direction of what I was looking for, and then he would take that and run with it. So it really was a collaborative effort, but a lot of the Brack lines are certainly improvised and just off the top of Andy's head or Brack's head, really, because he does become Brack. And that was a real pleasure doing that session, too. We did about 5 hours, and in that 5 hours, we recorded the entire song Institutionalized, plus a whole bunch of different takes on the little messages that you hear throughout the record. In fact, there are extra Brack messages on the vinyl that are not included on the CD because they would only work in the format of vinyl.
Ah.
But the closing message is on both the vinyl as well as the CD and the digital.
All right. Well, quickly then, before we wrap, is Osaka Popstar still going, or did this take just a slight detour for a while? What's the status of Popstar?
Oh, yeah. Osaka Popstar is still going. In fact, there are two new Osaka Popstar EPs that I'm wrapping up. That did take a little detour for me to finish this record because it was something I was so passionate about and such a huge undertaking. But yes, there are two new Osaka Popstar EPs coming soon. Hopefully at least one, if not both, will be out before the end of the year. And then some shows, and I think before long we'll be seeing Dr. Demento covered in Punk Volume 2 as well.
Beautiful. I appreciate
Please,
your time, guys.
Great.
This was fantastic, and I look forward to
Thank
talking
you.
With you, John, about the next EPs that you were just mentioning. And Dr. Demento, I just look forward to the next show. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, David. It was a pleasure. And if you wouldn't mind, if you could also just mention to your listeners, coveredinpunk.com, if they want to sample any tracks from the record, learn more about it, or even order online.
Absolutely. Will do. Thank you so much once again.
Thank you.
Stay demented.
The last word in there from Barry Hansen, otherwise known as Dr. Demento, along with John Caffiero of the band Osaka Popstar, and producer for Dr. Demento Covered in Punk. This one came out quite recently, a 2-CD set presented as a 2-hour Dr. Demento show. More at coveredinpunk.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KBC Arts. Thanks again to Dr. Demento and to John Caffiero, as well as to Sean Wayans. Here at KBCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Lillian Vasquez, Sharina Wadd, and Benjamin Perper. Music beds and themes generally heard on KBC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well, though tonight we're sticking with the Dr. Demento stuff. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Spotify, and Google Play, and most past shows are kbcrnews.org/arts. Also, you can now tell your smart speaker to play KBCR. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Just go to kbcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.